This program is a production of the Reformed Forum, online at reformedforum.org. This is Christ the Center, episode number 86. Today we speak with Ted Kluck about his new book, Why We Love the Church, in Praise of Institutions and Organized Religion. Christ the Center is listener-supported, and we want to thank everyone who helps to make this program possible. To read more about how you can contribute, please visit reformedforum.org/support. Welcome to Christ the Center, Doctrine for Life, a weekly conversation of Reformed theology. My name is Camden Busey, and I have with me today Jim Cassidy. We're pleased to welcome back, who is pastor of Calvary Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Ringgoes, New Jersey. It's great to have you back, Jim.
Good to be here, Camden.
We also have Jeff Waddington, who's teacher of the congregation at Calvary OPC in Ringgoes. We're pleased to have you on as well. Jeff, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well, and I'm glad to be here.
And our special guest today has written a new book. We're going to talk about it here in a moment. We have Ted Kluck, who is author and a speaker and also a screenwriter, who's co-written this new book, Why We Love the Church, with Kevin DeYoung. Ted, it's great to have you on.
Great to be here, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, well, we're pleased to speak with you. We've seen that you've gone around the interview circuit in one sense, so we're really interested to chat with you today and talk about this new book that speaks about ecclesiology. It's a reaction against this trend to move away from the institutional church. And as our listeners know, ecclesiology is something we're very fond of and something that we stress. So we're really excited to talk today about why we love the church. So guys, do we have any news before we get started?
Sure. Just wanted to mention a few book items that we may or may not have mentioned in the past. I'm kind of losing track, which is probably a sign of my getting old.
Or too many books.
Or reading too many books, yes, or both. Did we mention that the Gordon Fee, Nick Knott commentary on 1st and 2nd Thessalonians?
No, I don't think we have.
Now out? Okay. That's out. And anything by Fee is worth reading. You'll want to do that. Also, Exploring the Old Testament, A Guide to the Prophets by Gordon J. McConville. McConville is an Old Testament scholar, again, worth your reading.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's lots of biblical studies titles to look at, but those are at least two that I wanted to highlight. A few items in the theological category. Our listeners may or may not be aware of the fact that Yale University Press has issued three of the volumes of the works of Jonathan Edwards, which are generally the hardback sell for between $95 and $100. They're now available, three volumes in paperback, volume 1, 2, and 4, for $19, or depending on where you get it, $20 is the full price. I've seen them. It's got the same cover art as the hardback, and it seems like a very nice addition and now makes it much more affordable. And you can save your eyesight as opposed to reading the two-volume set, which is a good set, by the way. It's just hard on the eyes. Also, I wanted to mention that a volume that I've been involved with helping to put together called Christian Apologetics, Past and Present, Volume 1, is now out. That's put together by Dr. William Edgar and Dr. K. Scott Oliphant, professors of apologetics, et cetera, here at Westminster Theological Seminary. That's Volume 1, which will go from the New Testament up to just before the Reformation. Volume 2 will take us from the Reformation forward. That is in the stores now.
Now, you were thinking there might be another one just by virtue of how many readings.
There may be a third volume at this point. We don't know.
Okay.
There's certainly enough material to do that.
Sure.
But at this point, we don't have a commitment for a third volume from the publisher. But if you feel as though you want a third volume,
let them know.
Feel free to contact Crossway Books, okay? Just to plug that. Now, then there's some forthcoming items I wanted to mention, bring to people's attention, some good things. Of course, we're coming into the fall season, right, which means we're coming into the Christmas season soon, within 3.5 months, right? And you'll want to keep in mind a few things. And I may have mentioned this one before, Reformed Thought on Freedom, by Willem van Asselt as part of the series Texts and Studies in Reformation and Post-Reformation Thought.
Mm-hmm. The series it's an excellent.
Smaller edits. So you want to be looking for that one. They're reprinting Greg Reynolds, The Word is Worth a Thousand Pictures.
Oh, really? Because that was on Whippenstock, the
Yeah, the, or it's reappearing that way.
So, oh, it's is it through Whippenstock again?
Yes, it is. It appears okay. to be.
Okay, so it's a new run that they're doing. It's
I'm
same,
guessing so.
Same
it edition. Does not look like a new edition, just a new print press run.
Is it going to bring the price down at all because it was a $40 paperback?
It's still in that.
Chance. Okay, okay. It's a great book, though. That's fine.
I'm 30. $37.44. So yeah. It's under the $40 mark. Okay. Yeah, let's see. A couple of others I wanted to mention. R.C. Sproul has a two-volume commentary on the Book of Romans that's coming out.
Yes.
In September. A book that's related to our subject, The Lover's Quarrel with the Evangelical Church.
Yeah, very similar.
By Warren Smith. Al Mohler has a book called Words from the Fire.
Hmm.
Hearing the Voice of God and the Ten Commandments. That could be interesting. And then there's The Reason for Sports. Who's the writer of that book? Oh, Ted Clark.
Some hack.
That name sounds familiar.
Some hack. Yeah, nice.
Then there's, let's see, The Historical Jesus of the Gospels. Which would be by Craig Keener, who I believe teaches over at Palmer Theological Seminary in Philadelphia. The Gospel According to Genesis by Martin Lloyd-Jones. Collision, which is Christianity Good for the World? Christopher Hitchens versus Doug Wilson, and it's a DVD. And I would imagine that may have some of the debate that occurred at Westminster. Let's see. Couple other things here I wanted to mention. Yeah, here we go. One that's already been mentioned over Green Baggins, and that is Four Views on Moving Beyond the Bible to Theology. So let's see here. Let's see. Oh, and then Carl Truman's new book on history, and it's called Histories and Fallacies, Problems Faced in the Writing of History. That's not due out till November. Also in November is Evangelicalism, What It Is and Is It Worth Keeping by D.A. Carson.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And let's see, just a few more. In the Beginning Was the Word, A God-Centered Approach to Language by Vern Sheridan Poitras. That'll be out in November. And in December, The Psalms as Christian Worship by Bruce Waltke and James Houston. And then another volume in that New Studies in Biblical Theology, Got the Peacemaker by Graham Cole. And then this one, The Intolerance of Tolerance by D.A. Carson. That's due in January of 2010. And one more volume, and then we're done. And that is a new book on John Calvin. Wow, isn't that surprising?
Yeah, we've seen several of these, haven't we?
Who would have thought that there would be a new book about John Calvin in the year 2009? But this is by Bruce Gordon, published by Yale University Press. And my attention was drawn to it by a brief review written by Sean Lucas over at Reformation 21. And I've got a copy in my hand here, and it looks like a very well-written biography, very helpful in terms of situating Calvin within his historical, theological, political, geographical, sociological context. So you want to keep your eyes open for that. It's just called Calvin by Bruce Gordon.
Wonderful.
Gordon teaches now at Yale, but he was previously, I believe it's St. Andrews. So he's a recent transfer from the UK. So you want to keep your eyes open for that one.
Well, there's a lot coming out.
Yeah, and that's only just the tip.
Yeah, well, that's plenty. plenty for people to hear about and plenty for people to go look at. So that's interesting. But we're very excited today to be speaking about Why We Love the Church in Praise of Institutions and Organized Religion. It's a new book by Ted Kluck, who's our guest today. He's co-written it with Kevin DeYoung, pastor there in East Lansing, Michigan. We're very pleased to speak with you, Ted. Now, could you tell us a little bit about the first book you wrote together? I'm assuming it's the first one you wrote with Kevin, Why We're Not Emergent by Two Guys Who Should Be, as this seems to be flowing out of or a continuation of that first book. Could you mention just a little bit about that for our listeners so they know some of the context here?
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. It was the first book that I wrote with Kevin DeYoung, who's my pastor at University Reformed Church. We were at the time, you know, this was 3 or 4 years ago, I guess, we kind of had this idea. The Emergent Church was sort of, you know, reaching its apex at that time, I think. I mean, it's kind of jumped the shark now and seems to kind of be dwindling a little bit. But, you know, at that time, I think people mistook my wife and I for being a lot cooler than we actually were. And, you know, a lot of people were kind of throwing Rob Bell and Brian McLaren books at us and, hey, read this, check this out, you know. So not knowing a thing about it, you know, at the time, I was a secular sports writer. I mean, I was a Christian, but I was writing in the secular market.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. And I love doing that to this day. But my first book was about Mike Tyson. My next two books were about pro and college football. But as I was reading these Emergent Church books, you know, just as kind of Joe Public in the pew, I guess, a lot of red flags kind of popped up, you know, and there were a lot of things that even for me, you know, not being seminary trained, just being kind of a guy in the pew, jumped out at me. And I started to talk with Kevin about it. And, you know, we realized there really wasn't much out there a few years ago in terms of a corrective or a kind of a questioning look at the Emergent Church. And the one book that was out there that was very good was Don Carson's book, Becoming Conversant.
Yes.
And but for the average guy like myself, I mean, that was pretty tough sledding. You know, that was a lot of kind of PhD-level stuff to grind through. So we thought if we could write something kind of fun and winsome and funny and cultural from the perspective of two guys who really demographically should be all over the movement, we thought it might have some legs. And, you know, we're both young, kind of white suburban guys, which seems to be the target demographic for this movement. So, and specifically people who have grown up in the church. You know, there's this idea within the Emergent Church that, you know, if you've grown up in the church, then you're supposed to be disgruntled with it and you're supposed to kind of look for something different. So at least on paper, we fit the demographic, but, you know, obviously that's not what we were about. So,
absolutely.
But it was really fun. We wrote the book in kind of a different way. We alternated chapters. So my chapters kind of have their own flavor and Kevin's have, you know, a very pastoral theological flavor to them. So I think it works.
And you actually, I want to mention, won an award from Christianity Today for that book, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right. I'm still waiting for the trophy, though. It didn't actually come with a trophy. I'm a little disappointed, but we can get on our friends at CP about that for next year, maybe. So,
well, anyway, congratulations and much deserved. Yeah. It's received high praise, and it's an excellent book. So I want to encourage people to go look at that. But this book, coming out of that, Why We Love the Church, it's really, in one sense, it's countercultural, as some people have said, because it... you're presenting and you're making a case for the institutional church and organized religion, which is so strange and that really slaps some people in the face. What was your intent with the title, using the title that, such that you did?
Yeah, I think just to kind of be provocative, I mean, you go out there and, you know, evangelical Christendom and you say you love the institutional church and you love organized religion, and that's like, you know, saying you love public schooling or Halloween or something. I mean, you might get, which I do love public schooling and Halloween for the record, but that's probably another interview for another day. But, you know, so we kind of did it to be provocative, but really we did it because we do love the church. And, you know, you walk through the church section of your Christian bookstore and, you know, 2/3 of the books there are about, you know, I love Jesus, but I hate Christians, or I love Jesus, but I'm leaving the church and I left the church and found God. I mean, there are all these kind of, you know, first-person books about how exciting and spiritual it can be to leave the church. And, you know, Kevin and I, obviously, he's a pastor. He loves the church. And I've been fortunate to be in really good churches most of my life and have really benefited a lot from that. So I think, again, we found you know, kind of a little niche in the market where, you know, we could defend the church and be kind of two young voices saying, hey, you know, obviously we need to critique our institutions, but there's a lot of good going on here.
Absolutely. And I know our listeners will have a solid definition of what the church is. I mean, being Reformed people, we have our marks of the church, which are the right administration of the sacraments, the true preaching of the word, and church discipline. We also have the attributes of the church, etc. So the Reformed, you know, through history have had ways of defining what is the church. But how would you how do you see people defining the church? When they think of the church, yeah, what do they think of? What do they think the church should provide, or what is the church to most people?
That's to a many question, people, man, and that's part of what we wrote about in the book. I mean, I think for a lot of the kind of quote unquote revolutionary leave the church crowd, you know, church has just become plural for Christians. So, you know, if you and I are hanging out over a pumpkin spice latte, or hey, you and I are on the phone right now, we're the church. You know, this is church. We're doing church. And I mean, in a sense, yes, we do have to be the church in the world, but you know, there's also a place to administer the sacraments, to pray with and for people, to sing praises to our Lord,
yes,
you know, to hear great expositional preaching from the text. And, you know, I think we argue in the book that if you leave the church, the institutional church, and you kind of remove yourself from that, then, you know, you're not going to do those important things. Things are so important for your growth as a Christian. And, you know, I think so for some, church has just become plural for Christian. You know, for others, I mean, I think people have many, many reasons for leaving the church, and people see the church as ineffectual in the culture, and people see the church as kind of closed and country clubbish. And certainly, I mean, if those things are the case, we need to take a long, hard look at ourselves. But, you know, at the end of the day, there are a lot of great churches out there, and we think people should commit to them.
Yeah, it does seem that sometimes the secondary things about the church, not the essentials, but the things that the church by default ends up becoming, like a place to associate, a place to fellowship with others, a place for those sorts of things, which are important. But when those become the main thing, you can strip the church from its uniqueness. If you take the sacraments, the preaching of the word, a prayer, church discipline, you know, all these sorts of things, and strip them out and don't make them central, you can just make a church anywhere you want. Like you mentioned, over a pumpkin spice latte, if you're just hanging out with other people, you can get those sorts of things outside of the church.
That's right. And you get them without all the great edges and boundaries that churches provide. I mean, churches show us our own sin sometimes, and I mean, that's not a comfortable thing, but, you know, it's something that we need as believers in order to grow. And, you know, you take away church discipline and you take away, you know, doctrinal distinctives, and, you know, yeah, you're left with a lot of sometimes fellowship if you're an outgoing person and you have friends, but, you know, sometimes you might just kind of be left alone on an island, and that's not a good way to grow.
Hey, Ted?
Yeah.
Can you give us a little bit of background to this discussion, which you do in the book, but might be helpful for our listeners to you know, like what has been written or said in the evangelical movement that has attracted your attention?
Yeah. Like you said, I mean, this thing kind of piggybacks on the emergent church in that, you know, it's sort of, I think, based in a little spirit of rebellion. And, you know, rebellion, as we all know from our marketing classes in college, is very sexy. So, you know, it's easy to sell books to people based on that kind of an ethic. And
we can hope that your book will become banned in public schools.
There you go.
And then you'll sell a ton of them, you know?
Absolutely. Hey, it worked for J.D. Salinger.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So,
why not you?
Yeah. Drop their fingers. Absolutely. But no, some of the books and authors that we talk about, George Barna and Frank Viola wrote Pagan Christianity and Revolution. You know, Jim Palmer has written a couple books on leaving the church. And there are a lot of authors writing about, you know, kind of how they left the church and it was good for their spiritual lives, you know. And,
yeah.
And I think the danger with these books, you know, you can read them one of two ways. I mean, the one way that you read them is, hey, it's just one guy's story, and, you know, often these guys are good writers and winsome storytellers, and, you know, you kind of get, you know, locked into the narrative that way. But, you know, I think a lot of people, young people especially, read read these books and they trust these publishers and they say, hey, this is a way that I can live my Christian life. And you see that, you know, you see younger people leaving churches and, you know, it looks, publishers make this stuff look pretty attractive.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It seems as if these, the ones that are leaving the church and encouraging people to leave the church, they seem very disgruntled about the church. What are, in your studies and your research, what have you found in terms of particulars as to why people are disgruntled with the church? Is it bad preaching? Is it abuse of power in the church? Maybe kind of this impersonal approach to the church that you find in the mega churches where you kind of get lost in the crowd. What have you found are the problems in the church that these people are reacting against and have become disgruntled over?
Yeah, I think some of it's definitely a reaction against the mega church model, you know, feeling like a number or feeling like I don't matter, which is strange because, you know, if you kind of look at the arc of evangelical trends, I mean, 20 years ago, we had to have stadium seating and bright lights and a hot praise band. And, you know, now we have to have sofas and candles and mysteries. So, you know, it's kind of always something. And in 5 years, it'll be something different probably. But so there's that. I think personal hurts, you know, I think there's always a level of kind of personal woundedness. And again, some of these things are very valid. You know, we don't want to say you can never leave your church or there's never an occasion to leave your church. A lot of times I think what we saw in a lot of our reading was just political differences. You know, I think the evangelical left has kind of, you know, become a factor here, definitely in the last election and, you know, definitely in Christian publishing over the last few years. And I think there's a sense that my church doesn't understand me politically. My church doesn't care about the poor, you know. So these are kind of, again, painting with broad strokes, but some of the things that we heard come through in a lot of this literature.
Would you say that some of the, just to follow up on what you said here about the politics, I mean, that's really interesting to me, you know, as a church or at least as a pastor that is very careful about distinguishing between, you know, politics, the kingdoms of this world, and then what our message ought to be as the kingdom of God. You know, I mean, there's something valid there. I think that often, whether you're talking about leftist or rightist, there are a lot of pastors, a lot of pulpits that become political stumps. I mean, that's a problem in preaching today, it seems.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, that's something that Kevin and I just kind of talk about as friends a lot. You know, he's a big political buff. I mean, he loves politics and he loves to talk about it. But, you know, we try to be very careful in our little Reformed church not to become monocultural, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, if the pastor kind of uses that pulpit to push, you know, political agendas or cultural agendas that aren't necessarily, you know, biblical but are more just affinities, then, you know, you wake up one day and you've got that church with, you know, the 10 families with 20 kids apiece, and they all agree with you, and you know that they're the only people there. So, yeah. You know, we want to make sure we're loving the world in the sense that people feel welcomed and they feel like they can come and be exposed to the gospel and
sure.
And have that done in a loving way.
It seems to me that we can, I'm also one of those guys that likes politics, but, that's not the what you're supposed to be doing in the pulpit. So one can love the subject and be reading about it and keeping up to date with it and have strong opinions.
Sure.
Those, and you don't necessarily need to not share them as a pastor or minister, but recognize that that's not what the pulpit is for, right? To pontificate on political issues. Unless, of course, you're dealing with a moral issue that is addressed in
Scripture. Right, of course. The church is not a political action committee.
Right.
But the church does have something to say about a lot of the things that the government gets its hands into. Mainly, I think, because, well, since I'm kind of a libertarian, because the state oversteps its bounds. But that's my own opinion. You know, I do think the church needs to speak out against abortion, etc. I think it's important that the church say that that's wrong, and there are other cases. But, right. you know, to say that to be preaching from the pulpit and saying for or against government health care, et cetera, these are some things that the Bible might have some general principles about, but doesn't really have anything to say about how the government should be organized. But that's just another example, I think, of people making the church out to be what they want it to be, rather than the church being what God has ordained and instituted it to be. We're forming the church in our own image many times.
Ted, your reading of various authors and your interaction with folk, did you ever find anyone who had what you thought was a biblical view of what the church is all about who left it out of frustration?
Not that I read, and Kevin probably read a lot more sources than I did, so, you know, he's not here with us today, but he would be a better guy to question about that. But, just in thinking through his sections, too, I don't know that we did. We heard a lot of people, though, caution about this idea of the churchless Christian. You know, I mean, we were made, in a sense, the church is Christ's bride, so we're supposed to love the church. And, you know, I don't know that you can love the church and decide to leave it permanently. So I don't know that kind of a thing is possible.
Well, that's what I was kind of, from my reading of your book, which, by the way, is delightfully written, and I think people would thoroughly benefit from it. Of course, that's why we're interviewing you. Duh. Anyway, but it just seemed to me that that if a person had a proper understanding of what the church is to be and what it is, that they may still have the same frustrations, but they would address them in a different way.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the things that that my editors at Moody were encouraged me to do with my sections, they asked me to write about a time, you know, they thought in the past tense where church had been hard and where I'd, you know, decided to stay with the church or whatever. But, you know, ironically, it ended up that kind of as we were writing this book, it was an especially tough time for my family and our church, you know, and we loved it. Obviously, we loved the pastor, but there were some things kind of interpersonally and culturally going on in our church that we weren't crazy about. And, you know, it was tough, but I was able to write about that, you know, kind of first person in the moment. And sort of illustrate that part of what we did in that process was pray, Lord, show us how much of this is our church and how much of this is our own sin.
Yes.
And right. You know, even though there were real issues at our church that I think we're moving towards resolving, you know, a lot of it was sin in our own hearts, and we needed to deal with that and stay. You know, and again, it's not always right to stay, but for us it was, and I'm so glad we made that decision.
Now, what do you think the role of the church is in confronting sin and sanctifying the individual? Do you think that's an important role, one of the things the church needs to be doing?
I do think it's an important role, and it's so hard because it's a tough sell, you know. And
yeah.
I mean, we're so, like we said before, kind of marketing and demographically driven in our American churches. And I mean, it's tough to say to a person, you know, hey, come to our church, and you might feel convicted of sin. You know, you might feel
any flyers going out in the mail that say that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Come be confronted in your sin.
You know, you want to come and hear a 15-minute sermon about how to deal with stress or how to save your money or something else. But, you know, really, I think that is an important role. And again, you know, URC, I'm so thankful for University Reformed Church, our church, because, you know, it's done lovingly. And, you know, I think the pastor and elders have made themselves available to talk and pray with people, and, you know, and they do that in a loving way. You know, have you considered that, you know, some of this might be your issue? And, you know, I never felt judged or attacked, but, you know, I always felt, I think, spurred on to mortify some of that sin and to grow through it. And, I'm thankful that I'm in a church that does that for me, and that will do that for my wife and my kids. And, it's an important part of that, I think, submission piece in Christianity. Submission is another thing that we don't love to talk about in our culture, but
right.
kind of, again, counter to our John Wayneian kind of independent, nobody tells me what to do ethic. But yeah, you submit to Christ, obviously, as a Christian, and then I think you submit to the leadership and the authority of the church.
Absolutely.
It can can be a beautiful thing, you know.
Hey, Ted, just to follow up on that, do you have any advice that just in, you know, discussing these issues and actually living through them, the chapter that you wrote about your experience with your family and going into church and people, you know, all the pregnant mothers talk, you know, that, right. that was just a great chapter. And I mean, they're all very good chapters, but you really put some flesh on the whole issue of what it means to be a Christian in the church, frustrated at the church's imperfections. Do you have any advice for our listeners who perhaps might be experiencing a similar situation where they're just frustrated with the imperfections of the church and other Christians? How would you go about or advise people to go about conflict resolution in the church and dealing with frustrations over weaknesses within one's own particular congregation?
Yeah, that's a great question. What an important question too, because I think it applies to so many people. I think, you know, a couple things initially, you know, make sure you're in the Word of God consistently and make sure you're praying a lot about these issues, you know, and those are two things that I've, you know, failed massively at doing at various points in my life. But, you know, now as I look back on the situation, you know, I see the importance of that. So I think number one, you know, immerse yourself in scripture and prayer. But the other thing is talk to somebody about it. You know, I think a lot of people suffer alone in churches, and especially if you're the person that's not quite a cultural fit at your church, every church has a cultural vibe, you know, and our church is no different. And we felt like we were on the outside of that for a while. And that can be a very lonely place to be. But, you know, there are elders and there are people in leadership who want to hear these things. And even though it feels like your church sometimes wants to be monocultural, you know, there are people there that are concerned about it and want to hear your concerns. They want to pray with you. I didn't run into one person who judged us for what we were thinking or feeling about our church. And you know, when we started to talk with people about it, the situation just got so much better, you know, and we could clearly see the issues in a way that we couldn't before. And you know, we kind of started down that road toward, you know, healing a little bit. So I think talking with people, obviously praying a lot, being in the Word a lot, and you know, I would say be slow to pull the trigger on leaving, you know, make sure that's what God is really calling you to do and make sure, you know, you've looked at every side of the issue before you do that. But people want to keep you there and people generally, you know, if you have concerns about their church, they want to hear those too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. Follow up, Ted. What would you recommend that a person do in that situation with reference to the leadership of the church? How sometimes people just feel intimidated going to the pastor or the elders or deacons or what have you. How would you go about approaching the leadership on problems in the church or concerns that one might have about the church?
Yeah, that's another important question. And again, it's tough because, you know, I've been lucky to be in good churches. You know, and I've been lucky to be in churches where the pastors and the leadership didn't necessarily give off an aloof or intimidating vibe, which I know they can in some places. But I think, you know, when a church is working the way that it should, you know, elders and deacons make themselves available. You know, you know who these people are. You know how to get a hold of them. You know, they're kind of they're a vital part of the church in the sense that they're talking with people and connecting with people. So your church shouldn't make that difficult to do. It should be a matter of picking up a phone or dropping an email and saying, hey, I've got something I'd love to talk about. Mm-hmm. And every time I've done that, it's been met with open arms. And again, not all churches are the same, but different pastors have different gifts. But there should be somebody or many somebodies in your church that you can approach like that.
Ted, another thing that I've seen recently, or maybe in the last few years, because of this, the ongoing influence of postmodernism and this erosion of truth, and authority, some people are actually trying to swing the opposite way in reaction to that. They're actually looking for more authority and more institutional organizations, that sort of thing, and are tending to go back to Roman Catholicism or Greek Orthodoxy. Where's the balance between no authority and the emergent side, where everything's fluid and loose, versus a rigid hierarchy and a church government such as Roman Catholicism or Greek Orthodoxy?
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, I look at that more through a cultural lens, I guess. And I think, you know, one of the things the emergent church did for the church was it made us feel like we weren't having church. You know what I mean? If you go to an emergent church that meets in a pub or a coffee shop or even a, you know, an empty warehouse with lots of exposed brick, and, you know, you're kind of just discussing things, you don't feel like you're a church, you know? And I think a pretty normal pendulum swing type reaction to that is, you know, well, what feels like church? Roman Catholicism, the Catholic Church, you know, right. They have beautiful buildings, they have structure, they have liturgy, they have, you know, we're going through these motions and these actions that make us feel like we're a church. And again, you know, that's a wild swing in the other direction. Mm-hmm. But I think people did that because, you know, their churches stopped feeling like church, you know.
Yeah, and they look for something that's very obviously religious in one sense. That's another question I have for you. What is this? We've noticed this for the last several years, this Christianity versus religion type of movement, or this thinking that people want Christianity or want Christ but not religion. What do people generally mean when they say that?
Yeah, it's weird. You know, I think that's another kind of marketing thing. I mean, when people think of Jesus, sometimes they think of, you know, Bono in a bathrobe. You know, this guy just out there kind of engaging the culture and being cool and meeting people's needs and, you know, just loving everybody. And I think it's really indicative of our culture's desire to create God in our own image. You know, and you see it with books like The Shack, you know, not to delve too far into that. But, I think that's a really popular example of someone just creating Jesus and the Trinity in his own image. Yeah. You know, just this is what I want it to look like, and this is what I would be comfortable with, so that's what you end up with. And, you know, there are edges and there are boundaries to Christianity. And, you know, those are that's the narrow way kind of aspect of it. You know, it's not an easy choice in many cases, but, you know, it's the right choice. It's the choice that honors God. And it's the choice that will ultimately sanctify us, you know. But that, again, that's a tough sell, you know, and you're not going to sell a lot of books that way. So, you know.
I've got a couple more historical type questions for you. I wanted to ask you about paganism's influence on Christianity, if we might put it that way. What is this charge that people lay against Christianity, that a lot of its elements were just simply borrowed from pagan religion?
Yeah, that was a reference to another Barna book, Pagan Christianity, and the idea that, you know, meeting together in pulpits and, you know, this idea of a herald or a pastor giving a sermon, that's all, you know, borrowed from pagan religion. Mm. You know, and again, it's sort of this, you know, the thesis there is to get people out of these quote-unquote traditional churches and move them, you know, more toward a small group type gathering or a home church type of thing. You know, and again, I think we bend over backwards in the book to say that house church isn't bad, you know, and there are situations and settings and cultures where you have to do house church, you know, where people are persecuted and where those ministries can be very vibrant. But, you know, there's also a lot in the New Testament about, you know, this idea of a kairos or a herald, you know, for the gospel, you know, a preacher. And the emergent church really kind of devalued this this piece of church. And, you know, so there's teaching in the New Testament about that. There's teaching in the New Testament about elders, about deacons, about the kind of people that the churches need in these roles. So there's lots in the New Testament about a large group gathering, you know, something that's different than just a few people in a living room, you know. So I think there's a lot of support for quote unquote traditional church in the in the Bible, and obviously that's going to look a little bit different in different places, but it's there for sure.
Let me ask you a couple unconventional questions here, because you're a very unique individual, and I've been dying to ask some of these. And if our listeners don't know, you can visit tedkluck.com to get some of this information. But let me ask you, what can the church learn from professional wrestling?
What can the church learn from professional wrestling? What a great question. I think there's a lot of ways in which the church kind of parallels professional wrestling in our desire to kind of cater to the fan and meet the needs of the fan and kind of elevate entertainment above the real reason that we're there, which is to worship and hear from the word. So mm-hmm. I think we can learn a lot of things about the wrong thing to do from professional wrestling. But I think the other thing we can learn from pro wrestling is that sometimes it's okay to laugh at ourselves, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes it's okay to admit that we've screwed up. And I think Christians we're kind of famous for not having a sense of humor. And pro wrestling, if anything else, definitely has a sense of humor. And I mean, it's interesting you ask that because I've got a column in ChristianityToday.com now that I've been doing for a few months. I've gotten the nastiest, most hateful feedback in the hate mail from that column than anything I've ever written for the secular market. So I'm like, man, I don't know what that says, but boy, sometimes I long for the days of interviewing, you know, drug addict boxers again. You know, that seems so much easier and more gentle. But, you know.
You'd be better off writing a Yankee column for the Boston Globe or something.
Yeah, no doubt, man. That would be much easier. So,
what can the church learn from Mike Tyson?
Oh, wow. What can the church learn from Mike Tyson? This is a good one. And one of the things I love about Mike, and one of the things I said in my book about Mike facing Tyson, was one of the reasons I love him is that I see so much of myself in him. And I mean, he gives voice to a lot of the kind of the secret sins that we harbor. I mean, just a lot of the thoughts that I have, Mike actually gives voice to, and people end up hating him for it or being freaked out by that. But you know, there are a lot of Mike Tysons out there. You know, there are a lot of angry people and people who struggle and people who are confused that come through our doors every Sunday morning at church. And you know, I as a sports writer, I love Mike Tyson. I mean, the guy is interesting. He's honest. He's compelling. You know what he's thinking. You mm-hmm. know, whereas, I mean, most athletes and some Christians have perfected the art of talking without saying anything. You know, we can talk for an hour. Yeah, absolutely. We could talk for an hour in the church lobby and never reveal anything about ourselves.
That's right.
So, you know, it's funny, as evangelicals, we've got entire racks full of books about authenticity and how to, quote, be real, and which I find really disturbing that we have to be taught how to be real. But, you know, Mike is somebody that, for better or for worse, has always known how to be real. So
that's interesting. And we do decry some of these people, but when you look on the inside, we're all that way in many ways. We all have, I mean, we certainly don't all act out our actions in some ways that Mike has, or act out our thoughts. But, yeah, he's a unique individual, definitely someone we can learn something from.
Most definitely.
Well, this book, an excellent one, Why We Love the Church, In Praise of Institutions and Organized Religion by Kevin DeYoung, and our guest Ted Kluck is available. You can pick it up from the Westminster Bookstore, WTSBooks.com. You can also get it at Amazon.com. It's available. And you can also get Ted's other books. He's written several. And I would encourage you, go read his bio. Go visit TedKluck.com and read all about him. He trained to be a professional wrestler. Also played some pro football. You played indoor football. Is that right, Ted?
Yep, that's right. I played a year of arena football for a team that's no longer with us. So it was a lot of fun.
We'll live in our memories. And he's written several other books.
Also, according to the book sales figures.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And has written material for ESPN, the magazine, which I always enjoy. Also Sports Spectrum, which I'm sure many of our listeners are familiar with, and ESPN.com page too. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. Yeah. This has been great.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. This has been really fun. I appreciate you asking questions, and it was great.
And we're very encouraged by what you're writing, and we're very encouraged that there are, you know, quote unquote, normal people out there thinking about these kinds of things, you know, and
well,
sometimes we forget and, you know, we read about the church and ecclesiology and sometimes, you know, we get tied up in that culture too, but these are things that really are tangible and they're really important to everyone that comes to church. And so having you write these books and to come on and talk with us for a little while has been very refreshing.
Hey, Ted, do you and Kevin have another project in the works? Or because I enjoy reading your books.
Yeah,
we do, man. We've each got a couple of other projects in the works. Kevin has a book on the Heidelberg Catechism.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
It's coming out sometime in 2010. I don't know the date right off the top of my head, but that'll be great. He preached a sermon series on that a couple of years ago, and it was phenomenal. So
mm-hmm.
He's got that coming down the pike. I actually have a book on adoption coming out in 2010 as well.
Yeah.
It's called Hello, I Love You, and it's a story of the international adoptions of our two boys, Tristan and Maxim.
Oh, so, wow.
That's coming out with Moody Press, I think, in spring of 2010. So, and right
Excellent.
Now I'm working on a book where... for an entire year, which I'm 2 months into, I listened to nothing but Christian music.
I feel for you.
The experience. Yeah, I know, man. That's what I've gotten a lot of sympathy from people. So, you know,
I'm going to get some hate mail for this, but I just can't get over the CCM scene. It sounds like a factory just pumps this stuff out. It drives me nuts. I really feel for you.
It'll be interesting, definitely. It'll be a wild ride, so... and that'll be a Moody book probably sometime in 2010 as well. So,
well, we look forward to all that.
Yeah,
that's going to be great. So, yeah, well, hopefully we can talk to you again when some of your other books come out. And this has been excellent.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks again, guys.
Yeah,
fun.
I want to let everyone know. You can visit us online as well at reformforum.org. You can get information there. Subscribe to our podcast feeds and get these programs automatically downloaded to your computer. If you'd like to get a hold of us, you can visit our contact page on the website, or you can just send us an email directly at mail@reformedforum.org. I want to thank everybody for listening, and we look forward to having you back again on Christ the Center.